Good day, welcome to What's Happening MoCo. Today's episode, we're going to talk to Whitney Dula. She's from the county's Baby Born Healthy program, and she is a lactation consultant. She's here to talk to us about Safety Sleep Month, as well as Infant Loss Awareness Month, the month of October. We're talking about saving the lives of our most precious, precious people, our little people, infants. Whitney, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm glad that you are here today because our littlest residents, you know, then what are infants considered? Are they a certain age range?
Infants is anything under 1 year.
So under 1 year old.
First 1 year. Yeah.
Now what's an infant like at 1 year? How vulnerable are infants at 1 year old?
One is an interesting age. It's a really big transitional age, like especially 1 to 2. They're not little babies anymore, mm-hmm. but they're not fully functional toddlers either. So okay. There's still some things we want to be mindful of, you know, as far as their development and their environment.
Okay.
But there's also some things you can be a little bit more lenient with.
Okay,
so it's a transitional age.
Awesome. Now, before we delve into Safety Sleep Month and Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month, let's talk about you. I think one thing we always try to do is share information about county employees, and you have an interesting position. You are a lactation consultant. Can you tell us a bit about what you do as a lactation consultant and what it takes to do what you do?
Absolutely. So I am a international board certified lactation.
Oh,
That's the full title.
Okay.
Oftentimes people will just say, oh, you're a lactation consultant or an LC. And we are the really only profession that focuses solely on infant feeding. I'm not a dietitian, even though there are many lactation consultants that are cross-trained. They might be dietitians, they might be doctors or nurse practitioners or registered nurses. I am just lactation consultant, so my sole education is around breastfeeding, formula feeding, how to feed babies, introducing solids. But there's also, as we stated in this month, Awareness Month, there's a lot of overlap with sleep and development.
Wow.
So we have to know about those things as well. So how to have baby sleep safely and maintaining a breastfeeding relationship, or how pregnancy and development also impacts breastfeeding and lactation. So
wow, wonderful. I'm glad that we have you here, and you're so qualified to talk about keeping our infants safe. Our littlest residents, our youngest residents, our future. 18 years from now, they'll be voting and they'll be making decisions that will impact us and our county for years to come. Wow. So
absolutely.
Let's talk about giving them a safe start. What can you tell us about Safe Sleep Month, and what does safe sleep entail? And then give us a little bit about pregnancy and infant loss awareness.
Sure. So part of safe sleep, especially what I do as far as safe sleep, is with my program, Babies Born Healthy. Like you said, it's about keeping our littlest residents safe, making sure that they have their moms have healthy pregnancies, making sure that they're growing and thriving. So Safe Sleep Month is a campaign with like the National Institutes of Health and different public health, governmental health, community organizations to make sure that families are aware of, you know, what are different things they can do to help keep their baby safe. Most new parents especially are concerned that their baby is safe in general, like, you know, whether that's, you know, electrical safety or, you know, car seat safety. Like, so sleep is definitely one of the other things that new parents are often concerned about, and sleep is important. So we want to make sure that they feel educated and supported, and empowered that they're doing the right thing by their child.
Well, you know what? There's one thing I like to do when the county is doing something great and their county employees are doing something great and something important. I want to make sure that on behalf of the residents of the county, we give you a Nice round of applause, and thank you for all that you do. And one thing I want to do, and it makes it easier for me to remember things, and hopefully makes it easier for our listeners and for the people that are watching to remember all the tips that you're giving today. So we want to give a top five list of ways that parents can be better parents when it comes to taking care of their infants. So we're going to start top five, five being the least important, and all these are important, least important to the most important.
All are important.
All right. All are important. All are important. What's number five? Number five, Whitney, what's number five?
So I would say number five would be if, you know, the birthing parent or the mother is able to breastfeed your baby. Breastfeed your baby as long as possible. The American Academy of Pediatrics kind of updated their guidelines. So now they're encouraging families to breastfeed 2 years or longer. The previous recommendation was at least 1 year, but you know, whatever a parent decides to do is great and awesome. But breastfeeding is protective of babies, especially in regards to safe sleep. And when we're talking about like sudden infant death syndrome, which is SIDS, I mean, people have heard of SIDS. It's like the big scary thing when you have a baby. So breastfeeding is protective against SIDS because breastfed babies actually wake up more. And I know that sounds counterproductive, but there is some emerging evidence that babies who have very sleep periods and have a hard time waking up at night are at more risk for SIDS. So breastfeeding is protective of that. So that'll be number five.
That's important. And if we sidetrack a little bit, when it comes to breastfeeding, there's some type of, I don't want to say controversy, but there's some type of issues when it comes to convenience for mothers. What are some of the things that mothers should know as in terms of their rights when it comes to breastfeeding? Are there designated areas at work, or how are there designated areas in restaurants or airlines, bathrooms? What are some of the tips? This is not the top five list here. This is just because we have an expert here and we want to make sure that all parents are empowered to treat their babies to the very best. Whitney.
Absolutely. I could talk about that all day. Legally, there are federal rules in place. It is legal to breastfeed publicly across all 50 states and territories. So no one can legally tell you to cover up or to go away or, you know, wherever you as the parent are allowed to be, the baby can also be and be nursing or pumping. Airports do have rules. They are supposed to have a private space for a mother to be able to nurse or express milk. And technically it should be post security. So after you go through TSA, that's for airports. Businesses, there are different rules for businesses, like an employer. I know the county was working on a campaign to kind of get lactation spaces in county offices. I'm not 100% sure where that is now, but that was something that was I have been hearing murmurs about, trying to get lactation spaces in the county offices, which if they do that, I would be so excited. you know, because we, like you said, we want it to be accessible not only for our residents, like if someone's coming in and they have to go and sit and, you know, wait at the MVA or, you know, they have to sit for services and things like that. But even for the workers, for you or I or, you know, one of your coworkers, if they've had a new baby and want to be able to pump or be able to nurse their baby, that they have a place to do it. So it's not one group of people. And, you know, knowing where to find help. So babies born healthy program clients are fortunate that they have me. but many of our other health and human services departments, they have, you know, many qualified nurses that are able to help support them with breastfeeding. There are several lactation consultants in the community that are available. La Leche League is active in Montgomery County as well. So there are resources available to help support parents, whatever their journey.
Well, La Leche League. Wow. Okay. And that's what the League of Milk. Is that the Leche?
Leche's that's milk? What it translates to.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not great with Spanish, but a few words, I get the food items. I get the food items. And thank you for taking that.
It's not a Spanish organization, but it's a peer organization. So it's you know, other parents working with other parents.
Oh, wonderful. Well, it's great that the organizations that are like that are there. And I think it's important that mothers, expecting mothers and young mothers know that they have rights and they have a right to feed their child and provide them with the most productive and healthy and safe environment possible. And that's a great segue because we're talking about safe environments. What's the number four thing that parents should know?
The number four thing would be to control the environment. So making sure that your home and the baby's sleep area is safe. So not having toys, loose blankets in the crib. A lot of times people think that, you know, the baby's cold, you have a blanket, but that's not necessarily safe. They could pull it over their face or something like that. And that's a suffocation risk. Things like crib bumpers, those rail guards that you tie on the top of crib rails, those are actually illegal in the state of Maryland. They're not supposed to be sold in the state of Maryland. So don't put them in the crib.
Hold on. The safety element, crib bumpers are illegal.
Yes, crib bumpers.
Now, what's the problem with those things? Are they like a biting, a choking issue, or
what's the suffocation risk?
Okay. And when you
suffocation risk,
and when you're talking about the blankets, you know, you'd say don't leave them loose. What do you recommend in terms of, I think there's a thing called tucking the kids in. How do you ensure your child is warm and safe if you don't have the blankets loose?
Mm-hmm. My go-to are footed pajamas.
Okay.
Pajamas with little feet in them. The ones for like newborns and really small babies also usually have the sleeves can fold over. So if you're worried about their hands being cold, you can fold the sleeves over and they make like little built-in mittens. So footed pajamas are my go-to. There's also a thing called a sleep sack, which is a blanket material. And I don't know if I have one near me in one of these cubbies. But they're basically like little blankets that have snaps or a zipper down the middle, but the arms are usually out so that, you know, the baby, you know, their feet are covered, their body's covered, and they can stay warm. But as babies get older and they're able to roll, that they have their arms free to be able to move around safely. So that would be that's how you could do blankets or keeping the baby warm safely. Sure. And making sure their room's not too hot.
All right. Or too cold. Okay. So what's too hot and what's too cold? Because that's all relative, right? So I'm a big guy. So for me, too hot is like 70 degrees. Too cold is like 50 degrees. You know, so for an infant, what's too hot and what's too cold?
The ideal temperature for an infant's room is 68 to 72 degrees.
Oh, okay.
And that's an NIH recommendation. So that's not Whitney made that up. That's coming from the National Institutes of Health.
hold on. One moment. So Whitney, you didn't just make these things up. These are actually...
I did not. These are real things. If you go to like the NIH,
it's good to know.
Okay. All of this stuff is readily available. Right. I'm not pulling this out of air.
Okay, good. That's good to know. All right. So you're saying control the environment. And then, and part of that is controlling the temperature as well. Okay. Wow. All right.
No toys, no blankets, no loose blankets. Sleep sacks and wearable blankets are okay.
No toys? Hold on. No binkies, no little teddy bears, no teddy dolls.
A pacifier is okay, but no pacifiers that have the stuffies on the ends of them, anything that can, you know, cover the baby's mouth or block their airway.
Oh my gosh. Okay. But this is for infants though, right? At what point are binkies or little teddy bears or whatever dolls are okay? Or is there a point when they're okay in a crib?
I would say okay is relative. I mean, as far as a bed covering, like blankets or comforters and things like that, usually once a child can, you know, roll safely, move around. So like when they get to walking age, so sometime after between one and two, you could probably introduce a small blanket, but that's going to be relative to the child.
All right. Now, where are we now? Are we three? This is three?
We're at number three.
What's the third most important thing, or the third most important thing that parents should know?
I would say, you know, keeping in mind smoking and alcohol. So no one should be smoking around a baby. But that's also a risk factor for sleep-related deaths. So smoking and alcohol, because if the parent is impaired, it's really hard to keep your baby safe. So that would be number three. If I would say, sometimes, you know, I get a question about, well, what if the parent has a medical condition themselves? So always, you know, if you're expecting, always run your medications by your physician as the parent. And then also let your child's pediatrician know so that they may be aware of, you know, if you're going to be breastfeeding. And a lot of times I get questions about, oh, well, what if I'm breastfeeding and I'm on medications? Most medications are safe, okay. But definitely a lactation consultant or your physician to double check the safety of it and things to be aware of. So if a medication makes you sleepy, drowsy, you have weakness in your body or anything like that, you might want to talk to your doctor about changing your medication so that you'll be a safer parent for your child. Obviously, you shouldn't be drinking, trying to handle a baby or another caregiver, whether that's a father, grandparents, brother, sister, aunt, uncle, whomever, you know, making sure that the baby's in a sober household.
Okay, so sober household, no drinking. You have the brand new, beautiful, most valuable person, award-winning infant in the family, and there's a cookout, and granny, grandma had a couple of beers, or Uncle John, you know, for lack of a better name, he wants to hold the baby. What are the restrictions? What are your recommendations for handling of a baby? You mentioned that alcohol, so parents shouldn't be drinking and handling the baby. But no one else should be handling the babies as well that have been drinking. And this is a hard conversation, you know, because everybody wants to hold the baby, right?
Everybody wants to hold the baby. The thing is, again, you know, knowing your own personal tolerance, if you're okay after one drink, that might be fine. But one drink for one person might not be okay for another person. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's ultimately up to the parents as well. As the parents, okay. You are the number one advocate for your baby. No one else can do that job for you. Right. So if you do not feel comfortable with someone who has been drinking wanting to now interact or hold your child or especially take them out of your eyesight or anything like that, you are fully within your rights as a parent. Like, again, you're your baby's only advocate to say no. You know, Uncle John or Grandma, whomever, you know, I know we're all having fun, and I know you had a few things to drink, and I think it's better for little Timmy over there to stay in his playpen, you know?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So you can admire the baby from afar, and the mm-hmm. baby's not going anywhere, unless they can walk or run, then that's different. But, you know, in the instance of the child's safe, right. And as it relates to sleep, you don't want to be under the influence of drugs or alcohol because, you know, if the baby were, say, if you're sitting on a couch or laying in the bed or something like that, you know, you don't want to accidentally, you know, roll over your child, God forbid, or something like that happen. You know, so those you know, those are the things that we're talking about, okay. As far as handling a baby, you know, so making sure that they're, you know, that they're in a safe environment.
Wow. All right. So that's tough, but it's good to know. And then as parents, you know, the stresses
parents,
of everyday life,
have boundaries.
You gotta have the discipline. You gotta do the right thing for your children, and make those hard decisions, and have those hard conversations with your loved ones. Because absolutely. The number one goal is the health of the infant. So number three, drugs, alcohol. No. All right.
No.
All right. What's number? Oh, we're getting to number two. So I think we need a little bit of a celebration. Number two, very important thing to know. Whitney, what is this?
I would say number two would be to, it's okay to share your room, but probably don't share your bed and definitely not the couch or chair. So wow. If we're talking about sleep and again, talking about, you know, in the vein of sleep, because it's like sleep month and things like that, and pregnancy and infant loss specifically, it's recommended to share your room. So you can have a bassinet, your crib, your pack and play, but having that separate safe sleep area for your baby. That way, yes, if they are crying, they wake up in the middle of the night. No one likes getting up and walking down a hallway in the dark to go get their baby. So the baby is literally within arm's reach or a couple steps. That is good. What we want to avoid is having the baby be in your bed for some of those reasons we already mentioned. But because, again, it is a suffocation risk, you know, as adults, we like having our soft, cushy mattresses with all of our pillows and our comforters and, you know, all of our things. You know, there's more than one person in the bed already sometimes. So, you know, just to minimize the risk of any kind of unfortunate thing happening to our new little one, it's best for the baby to sleep by themselves in their crib. I would say the one caveat to that is, especially for nursing parents, if you're a breastfeeding mother, it can make you kind of tired. You're already sleep deprived, especially in those early days and weeks. So if you feel that you are getting sleepy, but it's time for the baby to eat, or it's about time to be for the baby to eat, it is better for you to do what's called a side lying position. So mom laying on her side, baby kind of rolled on their side, and allowing the baby to nurse in that manner. But hopefully before you go to sleep, you put the baby back in their crib or back in their playpen or wherever their safe sleep area is. Or if someone else is in the house with you, to have them, you know, say, hey, can you come check on me in 10 or 15 minutes, and put the baby back in their crib. Because we know parents are tired, and I like to teach from a risk reduction kind of model. I'd rather teach you how to, you know, reduce your risk and make sure that you don't feel shamed, because there is, I think, shame in that when we talk about bed sharing specifically. You know, everyone's kind of done it, but no one wants to admit they've done it. So it's making sure that you're doing it safely. So if you're going to have the baby, even if the baby's awake, but making sure that, you know, again, that you have a nice firm mattress, that there are not tons and tons of pillows on the bed, that your covers are, you know, your sheets are firmly, you know, on your mattress. So if your elastic is shot on your mattress, maybe it's time for some new sheets, that they're not slatting all over the place, because we don't want the baby to grab a handful and, you know, again, accidentally cover their face or roll into it. They should, if the baby's in their bed, in your bed, they should not be swaddled. They need to be able to have use of their arms and their legs so that they can move. So in case something were to happen, if they can kind of try to wiggle their way out of it. So that would be the number two thing, is babies really should be in their own sleep space. They need to be in their own crib or own bassinet, not in your bed. But the bed is better than staying being in like a chair or something like that, where the baby can fall, or get stuck in between you and the armchair, or between you and the back of the sofa, or anything like that. So, but babies should always be in their own safe sleep space.
All right. That's wonderful. All right. Good. Now, you know, the caveat, you know, the downside to that is there's this picture that we see of the adorable picture of the parent asleep with the baby on their chest or in the bed with them. And, you know, so we just stage that picture, right? Stage the picture. Don't have that happen by accident. Okay. Or I guess that's
I would say it's a very cute stage picture. I think everyone has that picture, right? And it's always really the dad. And it's so, and it is. It's very cute and it's very endearing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if there's someone else in the room, obviously if someone took a picture of it, there's someone else in the room.
There's someone else there,
Where then you can then pick the baby up and them, which, like I said, especially I'm a former nursing mother or parent. Okay. So I've been there. I know what it's like to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning and it's like, I'm just so tired and I cannot sit up. So I'm going to go lay down. But then it's, you know, I've even seen something that said to like set an alarm on your phone. Everyone's phone is within an arm's reach. You know, so set an alarm on your phone for 10 or 15 minutes so that hopefully that can wake you back up if you fall asleep, put the baby back in their crib, or move them back to their bassinet. Or like I said, having another person in the family, if someone, you know, if it's during the daytime and your partner is home, to say, hey, just come check on me in like 10 minutes and make sure I'm good. You know, so I was a serial Instagram scroller, because that blue light would help keep me up during those middle and late night sessions. So normally we're like, oh, no screens, but if it's going to help you stay awake and help keep your baby safe, it's okay.
Awesome. Okay. Well, it's good to know. And so parents have to have that talk. Anyone that's going to be babysitting, or even with your husband or with your
definitely,
wife or whomever, definitely. Let them know, look, you know, if you get tired, put the baby in the safe sleeping space. Correct.
Go ahead and put them down. Okay. Yeah. And it's important for caregivers to know too, you know, because parents want breaks. And if you're going to leave the baby with grandma, you know, mm-hmm. you want to make sure grandma's doing the right thing too.
Fantastic. All right. Now, speaking of the right thing, what's the number one? Number one. What's the number one most right thing for parents to be aware of in keeping their infants safe?
Put your baby on their back.
What?
I would say that is the number one thing. I would say one and two could be interchangeable, but put the baby on their back every time they go to sleep, whether it's nap time, whether it's nighttime sleep. Whenever they're asleep, they should actually be on their back. And that is actually probably the safest way for babies to sleep. And that's because of our anatomy. That's the way our bodies are designed. Babies need what's called extension. So they need to be able to stretch out. They need to be able to have their neck and their throat to be nice and open and stretched out. And the way our body is designed is we have two tubes in our throat. One's in the back, and that goes to our stomach. The one in the front goes to our lungs. And I know parents always ask, will babies sleep better on their stomach? And what if they, you know, choke in their sleep? Or what if they, you know, spit up or something? If a baby spits up and they are on their stomach, the spit up or the vomit can pool in the front of their throat. And then when you sit the baby up, they do what's called aspirate. And aspirate is when something that is not air goes down into your lungs and gets into your lungs. And that can cause a whole host of problems. whereas if a baby's on their back and they were to spit up, they're just going to swallow it back down into their stomach, which is totally fine. Sounds gross, but it's fine. Like, okay. That's where it's supposed to be anyway. That's where it's supposed to be. So it's actually protective. And most babies actually, when they're on their back, they're going to instinctively turn their head to one side or the other. So it'll most likely actually just. So babies should be on their back every single time. Again, they need to be on a flat sleeping surface. So as tempting as it is to leave a sleeping baby in a car seat or in those swings, it doesn't allow the baby's body to stretch out in that extension. So they get this kind of curve, kind of, you see how babies kind of curve and their chin starts to tuck into their chest. And that means that they're not able to breathe fully.
So
you want to make sure that, you know, if you're in the car and the baby falls asleep, fine. You don't need to pull over and pull the baby out the car seat, because most car seats are actually reclined slightly. So the baby's kind of leaning back.
Right.
But once you put that car seat like on the floor, and if you ever looked at an infant, those carrier car seats, they're like a little bowl. Like they look like a little C shape. They're not straight. So you want to make sure that, you know, once you reach your destination, wherever that is, you get baby out that car seat. And if they're, you know, if they're asleep, then we try to transfer them as best as we can. If they wake up, they wake up. It's just, it is what it is.
So don't just leave them. They're like, you know, once they're sleeping, because I notice there's a tendency, so once they're sleeping, you don't want to disturb them because if
you don't want to wake a sleeping baby. Right. Everyone, don't wake a sleeping baby. Except that there are certain times where you might need to wake a sleeping baby.
So don't leave a sleeping baby in the car seat or curled up in a little ball.
The other one is the sling. They put the baby in the sling to get the baby to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. You know, but again, they're kind of like tucking in, and you want to make sure that they're able to like lean back and really be able to get that full that full stretch in their body. So you can put them in the swing, they fall asleep, pick them up.
All right. Great job.
On Whitney, their back for everything.
Whitney Dula, ladies and gentlemen, Whitney Dula, she's brought us all of the great information, the top five things to be aware of as parents of an infant to keep them healthy and ensure they have a good night's sleep and that they make it to the next level. Applause for Whitney. Thank you so much, Whitney. Thank you for being here. And just one last time, you don't have to give us the full descriptions of each one. Just give us that top five list again, five through one, just the quick bullets of each one. No disruption necessary. Right.
Yeah. So I would say 5 would be breastfeed your baby.
Okay.
4 we said was to kind of like control that environment, making sure that the baby's cool. 3 is, you know, no smoking, no drugs, no alcohol. 2, sharing your room, but not your bed. And then 1 was making sure your baby's on their back for every sleep.
Wow. Very good. Thank you so much. And again, you know, and I think it's funny. 3 is funny because you talk about no drugs, no alcohol. But sometimes you hear these down-home remedies for helping your baby sleep, or if they're gumming and you want to give them a little bit of Jack Daniels on their nipple or something. Goodness. So are we saying that, no, you cannot give them that grandma's remedy for sleep? Okay. I just want to make sure it's clear. You know, it's okay, but then abuela wants to give her a little something to help her sleep or him, you know, so...
Yeah, no, I have a healthy respect for our traditional remedies and practices. And there were a lot of, I always joke, I said, I wish I recorded it, because I am the daughter of a nurse. My mother is a nurse. And I work with nurses. I love nurses. But it's hard to get nurses to admit they're wrong. and she admitted, she said that, you know, sometimes it's just hard to accept that, not so much that what they did was wrong, but it's just to know the information, okay? And being that, you know, healthcare, it is a science. Parenting is not a science per se, but, you know, healthcare and how we treat things is a science. So the information does change. And there are things that we learned that we did 30 years ago or 50 years ago might not have been the best thing to do. Now we're trying to course correct. So it's not an attack. So, you know, I would say, so for people who are dealing with, you know, or grandparents or other caregivers, other family members who are like, well, that's not what we did, or we did this with you and you were okay.
Yeah.
It's not an attack. This is not an attack on your parenting or how you chose to raise your children. It's just that now, as parents, your children are receiving different information. Better or worse is yet to be seen. Because these children aren't grown yet. We don't know, you know, but we're just getting different. So it's not an attack on your parenting. You did the best with what you had. Right. Yes, your kids are here and we're happy about that. And your kids made it to day 366. So we want your grandchild or your niece or your nephew, we want that baby to make it to day 366 too. We want them to see that first birthday. So.
All right. So happy birthday to all these wonderful kids that will benefit from the advice from Whitney Dula. And the county's Healthy Human Services Department, Babies Born Healthy Program. So, and if you can't remember everything from this podcast, or if you need some more supporting information, or if you want to contact someone like Whitney Dula, Whitney, what's the best way for people to get more information or to contact someone from the county that might be able to help them?
Sure. So Babies Born Healthy is, a specialty program within Health and Human Services. We're in the maternal child health kind of like division. So there's Babies Born Healthy. There is the African American Health Project, SMILE program, which also helps with pregnancy. There's the Maternity Partnership Program. So all of those are available on like the county website. I believe you can even ask about services on County 311. For Babies Born Healthy specifically, you can contact our program director. Her name is Angeline Bell, and her phone number is 240-777-3118. And that's how you can get on our referral list. If anyone has questions about any of the maternity programs, we're more than happy to help direct people to the one that might be the most appropriate for them.
All right. Well, Whitney Dula, thank you so much for all that you do. Thank you for sharing that vital information. I think there's nothing more precious than an infant, under 1 year old, like fresh in the world. Mm-hmm. And we want nothing but the best for them, the most safe environment, the best sleep, the health, the best care, and the best environments for their parents as well. So thank you so much for being here. Thank you for sharing that vital information. And for those of you out there, continue to ask those questions, what's happening MoCo, and coming up next, we will answer a question that was asked by a resident about housing. So look forward to that. And thank you again, Whitney for being here. Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right, and thank you to Whitney Dula. Oh my God, that was some great information for keeping our infants safe. And as per what we've always talked about, answering questions of residents, here we have a question from a resident to talk about housing. Yeo Maria. And she says, since there's a lack of low-income housing available, plus rent going up and up, she suggests that we talk about low-income housing and MPDU programs, everything since zero. So I have some answers from the Department of Housing and Community Affairs. And they gave me a few Q&As. First, rents are going up fast. What can tenants do when landlords increase rents by large amounts? They say that there are reports of rent increases of more than 10 to 30%. And for many people, that means more than $300 per month. That affects budgets for food, transportation, and healthcare. Currently, the county has no limits on rent increases. The COVID emergency limits have expired in May. The county executive have recommended a new temporary limitation, and the council will consider this limitation in September. So we'll have to give you an update on that. Rent increase notices must be given at least 90 days notice and must include specific information. If a notice was not given properly, landlords can be required to reissue a new 90-day notice. Tenants can also contact the Office of Landlord and Tenant Affairs, OLTA, for assistance understanding the requirements and to address improper notices. Another popular question about MPDUs, how can renters find more affordable housing, including MPDUs? The answer, the county has over 20,000 apartments with rents limited based on household income, both MPDUs and other restricted affordable housing requirements. For renters, MPDUs in existing apartment buildings listed in a searchable list with phone numbers where interested renters can call out to find if any are available. Information on available units changes all the time. Renters need to call the buildings they are interested in. The county has a renter marketplace website to search all rental properties licensed in the county based on rents, location, and nearby services. For first-time homebuyers, MPDU website has information on the processing for purchasing MPDUs. It includes requirements for homebuyer training, income certification, and the lottery process for offering of new MPDUs for sale or existing MPDUs when resold. Lastly, current renters having trouble with paying rent and need help? What is available? The county, good news, the county still has emergency rental assistance for tenants behind on rent who have had income loss during COVID, and tenants should call 311 to get information or visit the website by searching Montgomery County COVID rent relief. Tenants who receive a summons to court for eviction case can also call 311 and ask for help with eviction prevention. Asking for housing stabilization services, which may be able to qualify for funds to stop eviction or funding to help move. Again, this one's very important. Tenants who receive a summons to court for eviction case can also call 311 and ask for help with eviction prevention, asking for help housing stabilization services, which may be able to qualify for funds to stop eviction or funding to help move. There's also free legal and tenant support service guidance available to help tenants understand all the options and processes available to them to avoid losing their housing. Call 311 or ask for the Office of Landlord and Tenant Affairs for information, or the Renters Help website, MontgomeryCountyMD.gov/renters. That's MontgomeryCountyMD.gov/renters for phone and email addresses and for support services. So there you have it. You ask, we get answers, we give you the answers. Thank you, Yo Maria, for sharing this question about housing. Thank you for the Department of Housing and Community Affairs for sharing these answers. Hope they help. And as always, I ask you to ask the question, what's happening, MoCo? Because you deserve the answers. Have a great week.